Welcome to my podcast, Success Without Apology. I'm Rachel Milo. Together, we will pursue success in a legendary way, and we will do so without apology. Thanks so much for joining me. Hello, hello, everyone. I'm so excited for today's guest. I know I probably say that every time I have a guest, but every time I'm super excited. And so today, I'm actually going back to my college days, and I'm going to introduce you to someone that I spent a lot of time in a van with. Nope, don't think dirty. In a van driving to track meets all over the country. Jennifer and I were track athletes together in college, and she has now gone on to just become a super successful human that I admire and love. So this morning, I would love to introduce you to Jennifer Jackson. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Awesome. I'm so glad to connect with you. Not to say that we don't stay semi-connected. We really only live about an hour apart now, though that sometimes seems like a world away in busyness land. But Jennifer and I still stay pretty connected through common people and, of course, through social media stalking. And so,
true story,
right? So Jennifer and I, like I said, we ran track together. And so I've known, as long as I've known Jennifer, she's been extremely competitive. And she's kind of one of those people that I will just tell you, it always kind of looks like she's doing it without ever breaking a sweat. And it's a skill that you have, Jennifer. It's just always been that way. You always just kind of show up and game up. Now, a successful attorney for Resolution Legal in Oklahoma City. I want to ask you a few things about just being a female in law, and tell me, you know, what led you, Jennifer, to decide to become an attorney? Were there attorneys in your family, or how did you become interested in law?
No, I originally became interested in the law just kind of growing up and essentially watching just the news and just kind of having a passion for ministry and social injustice. I just kind of remember when I was around 12, 13, I thought, you know what, I'm going to be a lawyer, and at some point I'm going to be able to use that to help those who are less fortunate, those who are victims, those who, you know, need the assistance that they can't really give themselves in this kind of complicated system.
Well, that explains what I see on your bio online. And I think your initial interest because of ministry and social injustices is exactly why on your bio online it says, Jennifer Jackson is an attorney who cares. I'm not sure that every attorney's bio could lead in that way. And this must really reflect where your heart is. And I think that that is so important. And I know that you have continued to work in that space. And tell me now, tell our audience, rather, what is it that you do now as an attorney?
My actual day job is kind of defense work. So I represent employers or businesses that end up getting sued, whether it's through workers' compensation, automobile accidents, slip and falls, trucking cases. We kind of represent the businesses to figure out what is the best way we can help you through this process. Is this something that you need to address and change, or are you just being kind of sued for no reason? Like, what is the best way that we can help the business through this process?
Great. And so on the defense side, and I heard you mention this, and for those listeners who know a lot about attorney litigation and defense work, this is probably no surprise to you. But as I read through, it says that Jennifer is experienced and kind of specializes in trucking defense. And so tell me what that means in trucking.
Well, it's funny. There's actually a commercial that's been put out recently. I think it's from an insurance carrier that just talks about the fact that they're behind they're behind trucking companies. Like, I don't think that people necessarily process or understand or appreciate the fact that virtually every consumer good is brought to you by trucking companies. I think a lot of times truckers or trucking companies get a bad reputation that they're trying to circumvent the law, they're trying to do things that they shouldn't be doing, when overall, that's just not the case. It's hardworking men and women who are trying to make a living and who are trying to get clothing, food, furniture all across the nation. So one of the things that we do is kind of specialize in, you know, a trucking case. Now, there are times when the driver, someone just makes a mistake, does something they shouldn't have done, and you address it. But then there's a lot of times when, you know, luckily with the advantage of technology, we have things on camera now where somebody cuts in front of the truck or somebody does something like that. So we're able to defend the trucking companies and, more importantly, the actual drivers. Like, it's traumatic to them when something happens, regardless of whether it's their fault or not. So we're really able to kind of walk them through the process of litigation, because a lot of them, it's the first time that they've ever been introduced to the legal system, and it's just as traumatic for them as it is for just the average Joe Blow on the street.
What a good point, really. Again, I think that goes to the fact that you do care, and that is, they aren't truckers as in that anonymous face behind a big rig on the interstate. These are real people with their own fears and anxieties about kind of the same things that all of us have on the road. That's really interesting. And I think it's really cool that I'd also imagine that most truckers are males, and that you are a woman just being really great at doing this role. So I think that's really a neat specialty. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, it also gives light to people who maybe are interested in social injustices, or maybe they are interested in helping, and they don't know that this is even an area of interest to where they could, you know, if you asked people a general idea of insurance or a general idea of attorneys, and maybe they aren't always positive. But when you look at it through this lens and what you're doing for people, it's a really positive spin to defend these people. So I think that's really cool. And maybe it's a new potential future job for somebody who's listening today. One of the things that I also would like our audience to know is that unlike myself, who opted to not have children, you opted to have children, and I'm kind of convinced that you would just adopt every spare child that was available if you could, but you have three beautiful children. Tell me a little bit about pursuing a career and becoming a mom to three children, and tell us a little bit about that journey.
So I had been employed at my first law firm for about 2 years when we found out that I was pregnant with our oldest. And I had him and had a couple weeks off work, and I went back and I did kind of basically all day at the firm every day. And he got to almost about a year old. And I just remember thinking, you know, I can't really do this. I can't do this. This isn't working for me. I don't want to just walk away entirely, but I think I need to have some form of balance. So I drafted a proposal that was essentially a third cut in pay for a third cut in, you know, lawyer terms, that's billable hours.
Yeah.
And so basically it was, you know, I'll take a little bit less money, but then I'll be responsible for producing a little bit less work. And it wasn't a part-time schedule. It was more like we called a flex time.
Okay.
So, and luckily my husband was super supportive of that. And so basically, and it's still the same way today, he's kind of in charge of the mornings. I'm kind of in charge of the afternoon. So I usually get to work between 5 and 5:30, work. And then depending on what the kid's schedule is, if, you know, they have a presentation at school or they have a sports activity, I can leave, go watch that, you know. And certainly the advancement of technology that we have nowadays you can almost remote it, you know, we call it remoting in. I think probably everyone's familiar with that term. You can remote in from anywhere as long as it's secure. So I can work from home. I could work from my daughter's gymnastics. I can work basically from anywhere. So it just kind of allowed a different opportunity. And what was funny was once I started doing that, I was actually more productive. At the very first firm I was doing that at, they were like, well, your hours are increasing. I'm like, I know, because I'm not here all the day. So I'm not trying to look at something on the internet that I need to buy, or I'm not trying to talk to people. Like, I come in, I do my job, and I leave, and then I can work from home once they go to sleep. Like, it just opened up a lot more freedom for me to still be able to perform, but also be available to them like I felt like I wanted and needed to be.
Yeah, that's such a great evolution, really, in the workforce, is finding a place where you can work that you don't actually have to be seen in the cubicle next to you all day, right? Being able to be trusted to do the job. I'm a huge advocate for this idea of allowing people to have this new version of balance, which is not set by a clock, right? So that this half of your life is lived from 9 to 5 and this half of your life is lived from 5 till 9 the next morning, but rather it's so intermittent, right? That work-life balance now is 3 hours in this life, 4 hours in this life, back for 2, back for 5, and we just kind of get it all done in this new, efficient way. But I have to imagine that in the legal realm, this wasn't a super easy sell, or that it's not necessarily a norm yet. Is that true, or would you say it was easy?
No, it wasn't an easy sell. You know, the first firm, and I love them dearly. I'm still friends with all of them, but it basically comes down to dollars and cents. And so it was, if you can prove that this will be productive and you will still be doing the work that needs to be done, then we'll go with it. And so not only was it productive, but it was better. And then that was the biggest draw to where I am now with Resolution Legal. I interviewed with the two people that started it, and I, you know, really remember asking Carrie Palmer, who is one of the, you know, starters of the firm, because I had concerns because my daughter's doing gymnastics, so I would need to take her and drop her off and come back. You know, kind of just this in and out of the office kind of a deal. And I just remember her looking at me and saying, you know what, we're all grown ups. And I expect you to do your job, and I expect you to do it well. And if there's an issue with it, then we'll talk about it. But if you can essentially work from anywhere and we're okay with that, we just expect A-plus work. And as long as that's happening, then it's going to be fine.
And she just assured you that right from the beginning.
Yep. From the very first time, it was funny, we met for lunch, and one of the first things she said, because that was a huge reservation of mine, was, you know, I have a young daughter. She was training during the day up at a gymnastics place. And it was just a huge concern of mine because I was going to have to be in and out to take her, to bring her back, all of these different things. And actually, my daughter's in the office a lot. And she was completely fine with it, super supportive. And she's like, you know what, we can make this work. Whatever we need to do for you to be successful at this firm is what we're going to do. And we will put out A-plus work, and it's going to be great.
You know, I think that's so important that you said that a couple of times, which it's A-plus work, right? I think people who, you know, dream and have aspirations of working remotely, you know, don't also equate that to you must kind of be without air because you're asking for this creative work site, but that they expect then not maybe the B-minus work you could get away with when you sit in the office all day and chum it up, but when you're not there, it really needs to be A-plus work. And I think that's that nice balance or the reminder to people that when you ask for these creative schedules, you must do your part too. Let me ask you this. Do you think that this was so open and easy because she was a female, or do you think it would have mattered?
I think it was she and Russell, who started the firm together, are very forward thinking. And so in their mind, they want to bring in the best people to do the best work, and they are willing to work creatively to get that done. You know, Carrie's a female. She has a daughter, but Russell is married, has kids, and they were completely okay with, I have kids, I need to be with my kids, I need to have creative solutions, because she trains at this sport that demands a lot of time and attention, and sometimes I'll have to leave to be with my other ones. I just think it kind of speaks to just the theory behind the firm that they created, which was meeting the client's needs, A-plus work, but everyone working together, and let's do what we need to do to help everyone be successful.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And, you know, you talk about their great partnership as far as the firm, but you also have a great partnership at home. Both you and your husband are super successful. Sometimes I feel that people come to me and ask, you know, well, I really want to be successful, but, you know, does that mean then my partner or my husband needs to stay home? And I think what I hear you say a little bit is that with your partnership, both of you have chosen to continue to succeed and find creative ways, but that it's okay in your family to both be successful. So let me ask you two versions of that, or two sides. One being, you know, what sacrifices do you believe each of you have made to make that collective unit work? And then I'm going to ask you on the other side, which I think we don't talk about as much, which is, what do you believe the both of you have benefited from that others maybe miss because you are both professionals? And what is that providing your family unit that is really cool and maybe not as common because you are both professional? And you can answer either one of those first, but talk me through the sacrifices, but also the rewards.
So as far as sacrifices, I would say probably actually just sleep. I mean, from sleep. The very beginning, when I was first practicing law, Jamal was still getting his master's degree in engineering. And so he was actually home more when our oldest was a baby. And we just had it worked out. Whenever his class times were, I would come home and he would go to class. And I think it was just more of kind of this fluid dynamic where I typically am the one to get up really early and go in, get to work, get some stuff knocked out. And then he's kind of in charge of the morning. So even once they started school, he takes them to school, drops them off. I mean, any other sacrifice, I guess, would just be, it's not really sacrifice, but it'd just be planning. Like we have, like I made last night, I made a bunch of breakfast, little frittata things so that they can just take them out and heat them up and eat them, get ready for school, get things going. But it seemed like the biggest sacrifice is just kind of sleep, because if I have a bunch of stuff to do or he has stuff to do, then he has to stay at the office or I need to come home and I'm up late working and up early the next day. But I think the rewards for us would outweigh any sacrifices, just insofar as the kids get to see the benefit of hard work and dedication, and you can make different things work for different people. Like, we know plenty of moms who are stay-at-home moms, and that is super successful for their family. They just get to see a different version of working parents, but also committed parents and available parents. It just looks a little bit different for our family. And so they've gotten to see that two parents can work, but they can also be available and actively participate in their lives.
Yeah, I think that's really almost kind of one of your superpowers, if you will. That's the superpower of Jen and Jamal, is that they do have this, you know, you have this fluid family dynamic. And I think that's very admirable to see you make that work. And then really feel like the only sacrifice you're making is a few Z's, right?
True. Well, you know, and I have to say that, you know, sometimes I'm stuck at work, and, you know, and you can't, but the saying it takes a village is a true story. Like, we have church grandparents and then a friend that has watched, well, Josiah and Julia since they were born, who happens to be super close to the school. And, you know, like, if you're like, I'm stuck at court, I'm not going to be able to make it, I'm stuck in a deposition, can you please pick them up and take them to baseball? Like, whatever they're doing, we've been super fortunate with the people that have been placed in our lives that are more than willing to help us out when we do fall short. I mean, because obviously you can't do everything all the time.
Yep.
And we've just been super fortunate with some of the people that have been placed around us that have been able to fill in those gaps for us.
Yeah, that's another really great message, is that don't let me overgloss it either, right? That there's days and times where everything just goes to pot and you're like, crap, help anybody, right? You know, throw the life vest, right?
True story. Like, this is not working out. And then you just text people. Like, I texted people from the middle of the deposition. I'm like, this is taking about 5 hours longer than I thought. Can you please pick them up from school today and feed them and get them somewhere?
Yeah. Can you just help, right? Row my boat, right, if you will. So we've now known each other for 20 years. When you look back 20 years to where you are today, not from a professional standpoint, but personally, tell me something that you're really proud of over the last 20 years in Jen's life.
Honestly, I think I would say my kids. It sounds funny, but like, I have a friend, you know, we're friends at court and friends on Facebook and stuff, and she's a working mom and she works a lot of hours. And I think you get questioned a lot as a working mom as to like what your kids are like, what their lives are going to be like, what kind of people they are. And she was like, you know, I'm really just trying not to raise jerks.
Yeah.
And right. So I think that that's one thing that I'm most proud of, is I feel like I can, since they were teeny tiny babies, I can take my kids into court with me. I can take my kids to an hour and a half long Catholic wedding. And they're just generally compassionate, loving people that truly want to help and do good in the world.
Oh, I love them. They're little adults. They're like little mini-me's of you. you know, my mom did that for me too, right? My mom was a working mom, and she expected us to pitch in and to help. And then when we were in the office, to sit there and be quiet and let her do her work and to act like, you know, a little adult. And so I think moms play a really critical role in developing that in young people. And I'm going to ask you about something that I know that you and your family do, because you did brag on these amazingly kind and loving little people who live in your home. You guys do mission trips. Tell me, if you don't mind, will you tell all of us just about maybe either one of your mission trips or just the experience overall of mission trips and what that is for you and your family?
Yeah, so we first started doing it with an organization called Champions in Action. And it's a really neat organization that's based out of Ohio, out of Bowling Green. And what they do is they go to Guatemala City, and, you know, Guatemala City is kind of divided up into, instead of cities, it's called zones. And so we would take kids from these different zones, and some of them are super, super dangerous, lots of murders, drugs, different things like that. And we get these 10 kids with a mentor, and we drive up from Guatemala City up to the Punta del Palma, up near the port of Honduras. And we do a soccer camp with them, and we stay there with a week. But the kind of the important thing for the Americans is we really try to get to know the kids and their stories, their family stories, different things like that. And then we really try to help the mentor get to know the kids, kind of what their struggles are, how we think that they could best benefit. And then that way, after a week, we bring the kids back to Guatemala City. But I think kind of the unique thing about this organization is that the mentors continue to meet with the kids every week. So it really allows them an opportunity to play soccer, to go to school, to keep them out of gangs and off of drugs and different things. And we really first started doing specifically this organization because we really, really wanted something in which our family could participate as an entire family. Mm. It's kind of hard to find something for little kids to do.
Yep.
So I think our first trip, our youngest daughter, Julie, was about 5, maybe 6, when we flew into Guatemala City. And just the opportunity for them to kind of see the kids and interact with them, get to hear their stories, get to hear their heart. It's just been a neat opportunity. Like the very first or second time we went, then we got a tour around Guatemala City, and they kind of had their eyes open to the fact that there were kids that were picking up recycling stuff out of a dump because their parents couldn't afford to send them to school because it cost money. They didn't have that money. And so the kids would go and gather up recycling every day, and then they would just eat whatever they found in the dump.
Right.
And just to kind of see them and hear their stories. But more importantly, I think for my kids, it's been to really just love them. Like, mm-hmm. they don't look down on them. They're not there to help them through some, cause. They're there to hang out with them. And we went to a couple of girls' camps, and it was super, super important for my boys for them to serve humbly women. Mm. For the women in Guatemala, these young girls, to see that you can be absolutely loved with no ulterior motive. Like, it's okay for somebody to take your tray. It's okay for them to serve you and to love you and not want anything in return. They just want you to know that you are loved and valued and appreciated. And so I think that kind of left a mark on my kids of just truly how to love people unconditionally.
Mm, that is so, that is just good heart right there. It's so true, and as I have visited other countries as well, or I'm actually, visiting with a young lady now who really, she doesn't have the confidence to believe that, yes, somebody can be kind and nice and expect nothing in return. You don't have to sacrifice your body in exchange for someone taking your tray, right? Boy, it's so hard to believe, honestly, that women all over the world and even in our country still have that belief. And in our country, I think there's a lot of places to help you change that. But in other countries, they aren't changing that perception, and that men still are expecting women to do that in return. And so it's such a hard cultural change in some other countries. But we're very fortunate here to know that we can have control over our body and ourself in that way. And I think you and your kids are great role models. You and Jamal and the kids are great role models. And so I'm going to ask you kind of one more question as we kind of wrap up. Tell me somebody who's been your role model and why.
I think it wouldn't necessarily be one person. I think that I have been super blessed and fortunate that there have been people I distinctly remember at OBU, I worked at Stewart & Clover Law Firm, and Jim Stewart there was very kind, and I babysat for his family, and kind of weird that his daughters are old and having kids now, so it makes me feel super old, but just the conversations that we would have about life and what life could look like and should look like, and he was always one of those, like, kind of a protective father, kind, like, don't put up with any crap from people. You are intelligent, and you don't have to minimize who you are at any point in your life to have a professional career. Mm. As I kind of started at Hilgen and Brewer, the person for whom I worked primarily, Shane Curtin, he's a judge now, and you know, he and our families are close. He's our kid's godfather. And just, you know, some of the important conversations that he would have as far as, you know, raising kids and what could that could look like. And, you know, what do you want them to look like? What should that be? And then, you know, just kind of as I went to a different firm, you know, a friend of mine, we go and see her now down in Texas with Deb Unick. And, you know, she helped just with kind of practicing law and what that could look like. And, you know, conversations where she would say, oh, I still regret how much time I spent away from my kids. But it was funny because her daughter was one of our paralegals and said, I don't remember that my childhood like that at all. My mom was totally available and was super supportive and loving. And I just think it's a series of people that I have been graced with being in their presence and getting to absorb their knowledge, probably in large part from my professional career, but it also translated to kind of personal and family situations as well.
Yeah. Those are some really great mentors. And I know you mentor others. And one of the things that I, you know, just love to say about you that, you know, you have joined an organization that doesn't put their names on the marquee sign, right? It's not last name, et cetera. And I just find that just a perfect match for you in the sense that, you know, if you knew Jen, you would not know any of these great things that she does. She serves on numerous boards and participates and really truly is an example of actions speaking louder than words. And I know you never are braggadocious about your participation or your mission projects or any of that. When you reserve tables, I notice you rarely or if ever put them in your name. Just a really humble spirit who really is similar to that organization you took part in. You really are a champion in action, more so than your words. And I admire you for that. The last thing I would like to ask you is, as my audience has gotten to know you today, I ask all of my podcast interviewees to give them a hashtag to inspire them on this day or this week for life. What would your hashtag for my audience be?
I think it would probably be just hashtag define yourself.
Ooh. Define yourself.
Don't let others' preconceived ideas, notions, let that control decisions, or probably more important, like the thoughts, that running dialogue that goes through your head of, I'm not doing enough. I should be doing something different. My life should look different than it does now. I thought I was going to be somewhere else by now. Just kind of take it all in stride and just kind of be patient, continue to pursue your passion, even in a limited capacity, whatever that may look like, but just define yourself.
I love that. Hashtag define yourself. So for those of you who have listened to the podcast today, maybe this is a takeaway for you, and a way to silence that inner, you know, conversation that is not encouraging you or the doubts that run through your head, that monologue of self-doubt, that monologue of comparing yourself to somebody else, hashtag define yourself, and then go forth with the confidence that you hear from Jen today, which is you can do success differently. All of you know that I'm a huge advocate of do success your way. And take from Jennifer some of these really great and creative solutions to doing life as a parent, as she's done, or a partner to her husband, and this handoff, and what does this, you know, seamless life look like of professional and personal and parenting and giving. Be, you know, someone who cares. Let your bio on your site be an attorney who cares, or a professional or an entrepreneur or a salesman or a minister, whatever it may be, but may you all be known for what you care about. Hashtag define yourself. Please go to my website or the podcast and give me any feedback and use the hashtag define yourself. And with that, thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining me today. Thank you so much for sharing your story with my audience. I'm so glad that we had the opportunity and fortune to meet 20 years ago at OBU.
Me too. I'm happy to do it.
Awesome. To continue today's ongoing conversation on Success Without Apology, you can find me at Success Without Apology on Facebook or on Twitter and LinkedIn at my name, Rachel Milo. If you enjoyed today's discussion and podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave me a review. By doing this, you'll help me spread the message to other women looking to find success their own way. Also, don't forget to buy or suggest to a friend my new book, The 10 Commandments of Success Without Apology. It's now available on Amazon or rachelmilo.com.